Morning. Today's daf in Erev and Samech Daled. We are in Samech Gimel Amud Beis. Yesterday we went through a lengthy diversion of the Gemara that dealt with being Mor Halach Bifnei Rabbah, passing a halach in front of your Rebbe. Gemara dedicated an entire daf to this topic. Most of Samech Gimel went through this important issue of a person making sure that he does not pass in halach in front of his Rebbe. We concluded with the topic yesterday, and we are starting today with how Mavoah. We started the sixth parak of Ervin short couple of days ago, and just to quickly recap, in the beginning of the sixth parak of Ervin, so we're introducing ourselves to the idea of Eruv Chatzeros. In order to be able to carry from your house into the Chatzer, they're both Rishus Yachid, they're both enclosed areas, but because the Chatzer is a communal Rishus Yachid owned by many different people, so therefore, in order to carry, so there was a rabbinic institution, Takana de Rabbanan, that we have to be ma'ariv, that we have to go ahead and we have to unify ourselves to be able to collectively carry into the chatzer. This idea of unification is done via Eruv. Everyone is going to contribute some bread, put it in a communal basket, and put that basket in somebody's home. And this institution of Eruv is now going to unify everybody so that we can carry. The first Mishnah here in the sixth Perek deals with the issue of what happens if a non-Jew lives within the chatzer, and what do we do regarding the residence of a non-Jew, and specifically his share of the chatzer. So what do we do? We're socha. We have to rent out that. We have to rent his rights to the chatzer. This idea of renting out his rights is actually a separate gzerah derabbanan. Meaning, what it's going to force us to do is to have a somewhat awkward and uncomfortable conversation together with the non-Jew, in which we're going to be telling him that for this particular Shabbos we want to rent out his rights to the chatzer for that Shabbos. We're going to try to explain to him that this is a rabbinic institution. He's going to kind of understand, not really understand. And the Chachamim want it to be an awkward conversation. Why do they want it to be uncomfortable and inconvenient? So as we learned earlier, because living within such close proximity to a non-Jew, so we're going to be adversely influenced. And so what the Chachamim did is they wanted this to be an uncomfortable exchange, so that eventually what may end up happening is that we're going to move out, okay, and live only within the chatzer of Jews. But anyway, but this is the idea of schiras. Now, when it comes to a non-Jew and he shares within the chatzer, so he can't make a contribution to an eruv, meaning that's simply not part of the rabbinic institution, and he can't be mevatel rishus. He can't just simply nullify his share. Both of those, by the way, can be done by Jewish residents in the chatzer, but can be done by non-Jewish residents in the chatzer. And the only thing that can be done is only schiras. Okay. And how many Jews have to live in the chatzer in order for this to occur? So that hopefully you remember that was the first Mishnah of the Perek. Machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. According to Rav Meir, if I have a situation of one Jew and one non-Jew living in the chatzer, so then there is this requirement of schiras, and I won't be able to carry until I'm socher rishus. Whereas according to the opinion of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, there has to be two Jews and one non-Jew living in the chatzer. Then and only then is there a requirement of schiras. But if it's just one Jew and one non-Jew, there's no requirement of schiras. That's according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. And just one other thing I want to review, and that is that when you have a non-Jew living in a chatzer, so is that considered a dira? Is that not considered a dira? Obviously, we acknowledge the fact that he owns the home, and obviously he's got shares within the courtyard. That's undeniable. But vis-a-vis this institution of Erevin, is his dira going to be considered a dira? So fundamentally, the answer is no. But nevertheless, because of this gzera shema yalam dinam ma'asav, that we may end up learning from his actions, so therefore the chachamim demanded tzchiras. But make ikar hadin according to the strict letter of the law, his dira is not considered a dira vis-a-vis this institution of Erevin. Okay. All that was a quick review of the Gemaras that we've done since the beginning of the Perek. And now what we're going to be dealing with in our Gemara is a really simple question, and that is, what if the non-Jew decides that he does not want to rent it out? As we already learned, the whole point of having this conversation is that it become awkward, and he may not want to rent it out. We talked about how rental works. Is it a schia bria or schia ru'ua? Is it something which has more legal teeth to it, or is it something which is just simply a token rental? Either way, it's uncomfortable, and he decides that he does not want to rent it out. So what do you do under those circumstances? So that's going to be our Gemara today. That's where we're going to start today. Hahumavo, the Gemara here tells us about a certain episode, Dahavi Dayer by Lachman Bar Ristak. There was a non-Jew living in the Chatzir. The Gemara over here cites a name of this particular non-Jew. Anyway, and Amrulei Ugalei Rishusech. So the Jewish residents of the Chatzir said, "Okay, let's rent out your shares of the courtyard." So Lo Ugar Lohu, and he decided he didn't want to. He just simply didn't want to rent it out. So also Amrulei Labai. So they went over to Abai and they said, "We have a problem over here, and that our resident non-Jew does not want to rent out his rights to the Chatzir." So Amrulei Zila Betila Rishusech LeGabechad. So Abai now gives a solution. And that is all the Jewish residents, so every one of them should be Mevatel Rishus. That means to say that they're going to relinquish their rights to the Chatzir. By the way, parenthetically, I'm continuously use the word Chatzir. It happens to be that in this particular case, it's a Mavui, but it's the same basic idea. So anyway, so each one of them is going to now relinquish their rights. And Havli Yachib and Makum Nachri. Now everyone except for one Jew is going to relinquish their rights. And in doing so now, so basically, when all said and done in this chatzer, so how many people now have rights to the chatzer? So it's only going to be one Jew, and it's going to be one non-Jew. And when you have a single Jew now having rights in the chatzer and one non-Jew, so as we learn together, that would be fine. Now, admittedly, that would be fine according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and that would not be fine according to Rabbi Meir. But as we already pointed out, the halacha falls like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay, fine. So all this now is going to be the solution of Abaye. Now, what exactly do you gain by having everyone being Mevatel Rishus? Meaning, we're going to talk about this later in the Masechta. When you are Mevatel Rishus, when you relinquish your rights to the Chatzir, so presumably now that means that you can't carry from your house to the Chatzir. Okay, and there's a lengthy discussion to be had over here in terms of what exactly now have you helped the situation? Yes, now it is true you put yourself in a position where Schiris is no longer needed, but at the same time, however, who's going to be able to carry from their house to the Chatzir? Presumably only that one person who retained his right to the Chatzir. Okay, but anyway, it's not a small point, but still, let's just leave it at that. So Amrulei, so the Gemara now points out that they go and they still go back and forth with Abaye, and they say to Abaye, Midu taima ela delo shchiach de dairei. Look, the only reason why, if it's one and one, and this is what the Gemara pointed out at the beginning of the Perek, the only reason why it's not necessary, and Erev is not necessary, is because that's something which is so in common. But over here, what are we talking about? We're talking about many Jews living in this Chatzir. This is a normal situation. You can't just simply circumvent the Gzeret Rabbanan just because in this particular situation, we did a legal loophole. When all said and done, this is a normal situation of multiple Jews living in the Chatzir. There should be a requirement of an Erev. So Amalei called Betulei Rishus Gabichad Milsa Lo Shchichahi Milsa Lo Shchichah Lo Gazer VeRabbanan. Abai is insistent that this is fine because look, because of the non-Jew's refusal to allow his rights to be rented, so now everyone is giving up. Every Jew is relinquishing his rights to one Jew in the Chatzir. This is really uncommon. This is really unusual. This falls under the category of a Milsa Lo Shchichah, and Abai insists that this is fine. In other words, under these circumstances, there is no requirement of Erev. So, Azul Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yeshua Amr L'Shmaita Kameh D'Rava. So now, this is such a novel idea by Abaye. How do we circumvent the problem when the non-Jew refuses to rent out his rights? And Abaye gave his proposal, and the matter came in front of Rava. So, Amr L'Shmaita Kameh D'Rava, it was said over in Rava, Amr Lei, Rava's response, when he hears this Chiddush of Abaye, Im Kain, we're on the very top of Samach Dalet Amud Aleph, in came Bital Tataras Erev Meosamavui. Oh boy. So effectively what you've done is that now there's no longer an Erev. Because everyone's being Mevatel Rishus, and now that you have within the Chatzir only one Jew and one non-Jew, so now there's no longer need for an Erev. So the Gemara says there's no longer need for an Erev. So what's going to happen is that people are going to grow up in such a Chatzir and not understand, not know about the institution of Erev because we went about it in some other legal manner. And and Rava's objection is the idea that I don't want people growing up not knowing, not understanding the concept of Erev. Okay, just as a somewhat more modern social commentary, you could say that about most of our communities. I mean, most of our communities, there is an Erev set up and there is a contribution of bread made by everybody, but the manner in which we do it, so no one really knows about it. If you asked anybody, is there, you know, did you make a contribution of bread? No one's going to think the answer is yes. So it's a bit of a curiosity in that we don't go about it in more of a in a public manner in terms of how we put together our Eruv and that people know about it. But anyway, so but this is Rava's objection. Rava says that look, if we're going to have everyone be mevatel reshus, that there's no need for an Eruv. So then you're going to have kids growing up here in this chatzer not knowing about the institution of Eruv. And Rava says it's just simply unacceptable. So the Gemara makes a suggestion to Ma'arve. Well, let's make an Eruv. Now, let's make an Eruv. There's no need for an Eruv. And what the Gemara is now suggesting is, you're right, but it'll be an educational Eruv. Meaning, legally speaking, there's no need for an Eruv. It's only now one Jew and one non-Jew that has rights to this chatzer, and there's no need for an Eruv. But let's just make an educational Eruv. So the Gemara says, Yamu Eruv Mol B'makum Nachri. So the Gemara says, well, that's not good because that's poor education. Because now we have a situation where the non-Jew refused to rent out his rights, and now we're setting up an Eruv. So, no. In other words, you're not allowed to set up an Eruv unless the non-Jew rents out his rights to the Chatzar. And so over here, it's going to be misinformation. You're gonna make a, quote-unquote, educational Eruv, but then erroneously people are going to walk away thinking, oh, we can make an Eruv, even when the non-Jew refuses to rent out his rights. So the Gemara says that's no good. So the Gemara says, Dimechar Zina. Okay, so you know what we'll do as part of the educational Eruv? So we'll announce it. We'll publicly announce it that the Eruv is being put down over here, but really it's an ineffective Eruv. And we'll try to preserve the institution of Eruv, but let people know that this is not really an Eruv. Okay, so as you can imagine, now it's getting extraordinarily complicated, and the Gemara's rejection is very simple. Archarzasa Lidartike, what are you doing? You're going to make a proclamation. And when all said and done, the children see a lot more than what they hear. And they're seeing an Eruv put up, and they see the non-Jew who's refusing to rent out his rights, and they're just simply going to grow up over here in this chatzer and be simply misinformed. So the Gemara does not like this idea whatsoever, Elam Rava. So the Gemara says, okay, so Rava does not like a bai suggestion. So in the absence of a bai suggestion, we need a new suggestion. Meaning, if we are living in a chatzar where there's a non-Jew who's refusing to rent out his spot, so what are we going to do under those circumstances? So Abaye had a creative idea, a creative solution of everyone being mevatel reshus, but Rava doesn't like it, because Rava says, I don't want to just simply do away with the construct of an Eruv. Kids are going to grow up not knowing about the institution of Eruv. So Elam Rava, so Rava says, Le'zochan minayo likarev le. So, let a member of the chatzar become closer and friendlier with the non-Jew. And and ask from the non-Jew who lives in the chatzer if he could have permission to put something down in his chatzer, store something over there with the permission of the non-Jew, have a kischir lekito. And now effectively what this Jew has become is he's become a worker, an employee of the non-Jew. Now, this is a really loose definition of an employee, admittedly, but over here, this is just to satisfy the requirement of renting space from the non-Jew. So in this rental that we've created, so even though you wouldn't exactly call this employment, where I'm just simply asked permission from the non-Jew if I could put, with his permission, something down in the chatzer, but under these circumstances where we are trying to put together an Eruv, so the Chachamim were a little bit looser in terms of the definitions of what is considered an employee. Parenthetically, by the way, the two terms that we're using over here, Schiro Lakito. Schiro is where you basically become a sharecropper full-time. Lakito is where you're a part-time sharecropper, only working during the season. But anyway, so you are now, quote-unquote, an employee. I'm putting that term in quotes. And Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, and we know the halach is, Afilu Schiro Veafilu Lakito, Nosein Eruva Vidayo. So as far as giving over an Eruv, so let's say you are not the principal, but you happen to be an employee, that's enough. That's enough to make a contribution to the Eruv so that those shares now are represented. So you could represent those shares even though you're not the principal, even though you're only an employee, but an employee could do so. And so now becoming an employee of the non-Jew, so now you could represent the non-Jew vis-a-vis this particular era. That is Rava's suggestion. Obviously over here, there's a lot of creativity in the suggestion, and that really what we're doing is that we're having an extraordinarily loose definition of what an employee actually means, But for the purposes of Erev, Ravi feels that this will be sufficient, this would be satisfactory. So Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef, this idea now, that if you're an employee, so now you can act as a representative of the principal in terms of making a contribution to the Erev, or in the case where you are an employee of a non-Jew, so now you can act on his behalf vis-a-vis the non-Jew's requirement of renting out a space, whatever the case is. So now that we said that, so Abai says to Rav Yosef, so let's say, for example, Hayusham Chamisha Stira V'Chamisha L'Kita Mahu. Let's say we have five employees, either full-time or part-time, doesn't really matter, and they're all working for the non-Jew. So what then would be the halacha? Meaning, in the case where there was one employee, so he's going to be enough to create participation in the Erev. So the curiosity of the Gemara now is that, let's say you had five employees. Are each one of them also going to require to participate within the Erev? So Amalei, so he says, no, of course not. Rav Yosef's answer to Abaye. Im amru schiru l'kita l'hakel, yomru schiru l'kita l'hachmer? No. This innovation is only to create a leniency. It's not to create a stringency. Meaning, once you have an employee of the principal, so he can now act on behalf of the principal. But that doesn't mean that every employee now is going to be a representative of the principal, and every one of them has to now participate in the Erev. You only need one of them to do so. This is an idea which is only there to help us, lahakel, but not to hurt us, not to be machmir. Okay, so Adkan, so that brings us now to the end of the discussion of what do we do with the reluctant non-Jew and the chatzir who does not want to rent out this space. So what are our solutions? So the Gemara now has offered two solutions, that of Abai, the other of Rava. Abai's solution is that everyone with the chatzir will be mevatel reshus towards one Jew, so that you end up with, in the chatzir, the rights of one Jew and one non-Jew, and we pass on like Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, where there's no need for an Erev. Rava objected to it, because then, if there's no need for an Erev, we're not laying down an Erev, and now people are not going to remember the institution of Erev. Rava didn't like that. But rather, Rava says is that what you'll do is you'll have somebody who become a quote-unquote employee of the non-Jew. He gives a mechanism how to do that once you become an employee of the non-Jew. So now you can represent the non-Jew in this chatzir, and the as a representative of the non-Jew. So you'll accept the rental for the purposes of the non-Jew. A goof of the Gemara now is going to look at this a little more closely, and the Gemara is going to go off on a bit of a tangent. I'm Rabbi Yonah Shmuel, Afilu Sirav, Afilu Kito Nosin, Eruva Vadayo, an employee, any kind of employee, full-time, part-time, can participate in the Erev, and that would be sufficient. And you can now be a representative of that, of the principal, of your employer. So I'm Rav Nachman Kamamali Ashmaisa. Rav Nachman loved it. He loved the innovation, he loved the creativity of such a maneuver. Rav Nachman said, that's fantastic. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, and then Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel says, well, if you love that, well, wait to hear this one. And that is, let me share with you another halacha. Shas Revius Al Yalra, that if you drink a Revius of wine, it's not a lot, it's a Revius of a log, about 4 ounces, so you drink 4 ounces of wine, so you can't paskin halacha. So I'm Rav Nachman, when Rav Nachman heard that, so he said, lo ma yashmaita. You know, it's funny, I don't love that psak so much. Daha'ana kol kama delo shasina Revius of dechamra. Rav Nachman says that, you know, when I don't drink wine, so lo tzili daite, so I'm not clear in my thought. And so just to get me going in the morning, just to get me in a more lucid state of mind, so the truth of the matter is I need to drink a revius of wine. So Rav Nachman says, I'm not particularly happy with that psak. So Amalei Rava, so Rava is going to be critical of Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman, what he seems to be doing now is basically grading the halachas that he heard. Right? He heard one halacha vis-a-vis the employee and how he could represent his employer vis-a-vis the Erev. He loved it. But then he heard the other halacha about drinking wine, you can't paskin. He didn't love it. And he's grading the halachas. And Rav now is going to be critical of Rav Nachman. So Amalei Rav Nachman, Rav says to Rav Nachman, my time, Amar Hachi. You can't do that. Amar Rebbe Acha Bar Chinana. So literally, the pasuk in Mishlei describes that anyone who befriends a prostitute, so he's going to lose all of his wealth. The simple pshat in the pasuk, kind of self-evident, meaning you're going to lose money if that's how you're spending your money. But the Gemara understands this to be understood on a deeper level, and that is kol ha'omer shmo zu na'eh, v'zu eino na'eh. The word zonos over here is an acronym or a contraction of the word zunae. Anytime you start judging and grading various drushes that you hear, halachas that you hear, this one's nice, this one's not nice, so then me'abed hono shel Torah, you're going to lose the treasure of the Torah. So it means to say, Rav says to Rav Nachman, you can't do that. Meaning a halacha is a halacha, and we are in no position to grade it. And presumably, by the way, it would be true in both directions. Meaning to say this one's beautiful, and obviously this one's not beautiful, that goes without saying. That's something you shouldn't say. But even to go ahead and to commend a particular halacha, oh, I like that one. Oh, that one makes a lot of sense. It really speaks to me. That also, in other words, the halacha is the halacha. And so nobody should be in any kind of position where they should be grading it, and presumably that would be true in both directions. For sure, not the negative, not the positive as well. So Amar Leh Hadrabi. So Rav Nachman heard the Musar, and Rav Nachman immediately retracted. He said, okay, I'm all in. And whatever the halacha is, that's the halacha. And Rav Nachman now swears off not giving any grade to any particular halacha. Okay, and so here we go. And we're going to digress. And so this is now going to be the launching pad of the Gemara, digressing into a number of topics having to do with what we just spoke about. If a person is drinking, so he shouldn't daven. In other words, he's not in a good state of mind to have kavana, and so therefore he shouldn't daven. However, if you just had a couple of drinks, so hopefully we'll try to be clearer about that, but if you had a couple of drinks, so the tefillah b'di'evit would be a good tefillah. Now, shikar al yispalo, if you are drunk, so then you shouldn't daven mi'im yispalo tefillah satoeva. Now, not just being under the influence, but if a person is inebriated, so then the davening is considered a toeva. So, hechidami shisir ve'hechidami shikor. So the Gemara says, okay, so when are you under the influence, where the tefillah is still an acceptable tefillah, and when are you considered drunk? So, ki ha de rabbi abba bar shumni v'rav menasha bar yirmiya migifti, the havu kam after mehadade ama abra denar yufte. So they were departing from one another, and they were at the bridge of the river Yufti. And Amru, kochaminam lema milsa, delo shmila chavre. So let's say something new and original to one another, and a halacha. That whenever you say goodbye to somebody and you know you're not going to see them for a while, so the best way to say goodbye is by presenting a halacha. In that way, you're going to remember the person, you're going to remember the halacha. Meaning these are going to be the departing halachas that you say when you say goodbye to somebody. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, you're going to have a good memory of presumably both the halacha and the person himself. So Pasachad v'Amar, one of them said, Hechidami shasui v'hechidami shikor. Oh, and obviously there's a reason why we're telling over the story right now, because one of the halachas that's going to be said over as they are departing from one another is this halacha regarding the difference between being under the influence of alcohol versus being drunk. So shasui kol shiyachol adab l'fnei ha-melech. So when are you under the influence? You're under the influence, meaning, but you're not drunk, when you can still maintain a conversation, and maintain a conversation with the king. Meaning that you know you're in the presence of the king, and you know that you got to be appropriate about what you say. You got to be careful about what you say. So you may be a little bit under the influence of alcohol, but you could still watch your words. And then shikra kol she'ni yachol adab l'fnei ha-melech. Now, when are you drunk? You're drunk where? You're in front of the king. You say something inappropriate. He may just end up demanding your life, and you still can't control yourself. So under those circumstances, that's considered shikur. And so the Gemara says that would be a good way to quantify when you're just simply under the influence and your tefillah b'di'evod would be considered a tefillah. It's still best not to daven under the influence, but the tefillah is a b'di'evod would be a valid tefillah, as opposed to a shikur where it's a toeva. It's an abomination. A person shouldn't speak like that. Pasach idach v'amar. So as long as we're in the story, so really the point has been made and we're ready to move on, but as long as we're hearing the story, what's the other halacha? Meaning they were two Talmidei Chachamim parting for one another, so we heard one vort, so now the Gemara is going to say over the other halacha. So Pasach Yidach V'Amar, the other one says, Hamachzik B'Nechzei Agir. So let's say you just inherited Nechzei Agir. Now I say inherited, the word inheritance is not really the right word, but basically you got yourself into a windfall. Agir dies and leaves over a good estate. So kol hakodem zoche. So anyone who gets there first is going to acquire it. He does not have any children. If we're assuming we're talking about a case where he doesn't have any children, and the other family members halachically are not considered family members, and so under these circumstances now, all of his properties and all of his assets are hefker. Whoever gets there first is going to acquire it. So now you got it. Under those circumstances, how do you protect wealth? So over here we're talking about wealth management and wealth protection. So how do you do that? So what do you do in order to preserve it? Now, why does it need preservation? So I'll show you Rashi on the top of the next Amud, where Rashi says, because if you come on to a lot of money quickly, so that's going to bring about the Ayin Hara. And so people are going to look at you, they're going to be jealous. And once they put the Ayin Hara on that wealth, so then it is at risk of being lost. So basically now what you're doing in order to protect your assets is that you're combating the Ayin Hara. So what you're going to do with a portion of the money is you're going to use it for a mitzvah. And the Gemara now is going to recommend which mitzvah should be done with the money. So one suggestion is Yikach Mem Sefer Torah, you should buy a Sefer Torah. And obviously not with all the money, meaning this is for purposes of protection of the wealth. Rashi writes on the very bottom, Bim Mitzvah Sam, with some of the money. And that's going to protect the remaining part of the asset. Amar Rav Sheshes Afilu, as we now are on the top of the Amud Beis, Afilu Baal B'Nechzei Ishto. Let's say you get a windfall of money in other ways as well. Let's say you marry a woman and she comes in with a large estate, or her father gave her a large dowry. Whatever the case is, once again, you just walked into a windfall of money. So the same thing, Rav Amar Afilu Eved, Afilu Avad Iska V'Ravach. Or let's say Rava gives another example. And that is, you had a tremendous investment. You put down some money and you capitalized. You turned it into a tremendous return. So same halacha. And Rav Papa Amar Afilu Matza Metzia. Rav Papa says, let's say you found a metzia. In all these circumstances, so you found yourself with a lot of money. So what are you going to do? So again, so as to protect the assets, what you're going to do with some of the money is you're going to buy a Dvar Mitzvah. Rashi are on the top over here as promised. I'm going to show you the Rashi. Top of the Amud. Rashi, Baal B'Nechzei Ishto, Baal Mevid B'Hu Mitzvah. Demilsa De Tohi Bo Inche, because when you enter into so much money so quickly, so people are going to be amazed. But unfortunately, it's just human nature. They're going to be amazed and they're going to be jealous. So, and Rashi writes, So Tohu Bo Inche Nami Hi V'Shalta Ba'Ina Bisha. And people are going to put the Ayin Hara on your newfound wealth. So this is all part of wealth management, wealth protection. So what are you going to do with that money? So we already had one suggestion, which is to take some of the money and buy with it a Sefer Torah. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Afilu. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Afilu Kosei B'Hu Tefillin. So let's say you write a new pair of tefillin with the money that you just either earned, was gifted, whatever the case is. Amar Rav Chinam V'Yitemer Rabbi Chanina, Maikra, the Pasuk, Dichsi Vayidor Yisrael Neder. Meaning, where do we have this idea in the Torah? This idea that if you come onto wealth, so by taking a small portion of it and dedicating it towards the Dvar Mitzvah, it's going to protect you. So we see, after the death of Aaron, and we go to battle against the nation of Arad, which Rashi over there says really is Canaan. So under those circumstances, we made a nether and we dedicated some of the spoils of war. It was going to be used for a Dvar Mitzvah. So we see this already in the Pesukim. Amar Remi Bar Abba, Derech Melvashenu Kol Shehu, Mafigin Esayayin. We talked about if a person is inebriated, so you can't paskin halacha. Under certain circumstances, if you really are intoxicated, you can't daven, your davening's a toeva. What do you do to mitigate the effects of the inebriation? Is there a way of accelerating sobriety? So the Gemara now discusses. So derech mil v'shenu kol shu mefigin asayayin. So yes, there is a way to mitigate the wine, and that would be either to walk a mil, walk about a kilometer, or take a little nap. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Abba Rav Vua, Lo Shano Elo Shashasa K'dei Revius. yes, those are great ways of mitigating the effects of the wine, but that's only if you drank a little bit of wine, just a revius, of Alshasa Yosem Revius, called Shekane Shederach Tordaso, Vishena Mishakar So. However, if you drank a lot of wine, so walking it off is not going to work, and taking a short nap is also not going to work as well. In fact, it's just going to make you more confused. Vederach Mil Mafigo Ayayin V'Atanya, the Gemara says, now, if you drank a revius of wine, so you're telling me that just walking a mill is going to be enough to mitigate the effects of the wine and induce sobriety? The Gemara says, I'm not so sure if that's right. V'Atanya, let's take a look together at this braisa. So there was an incident with Rabbi Gamliel, who was riding on a donkey, and he was going from the town of Akko to the town of Kziv. He was accompanied by Rabbi Eli. Now they found a loaf of bread on the way. So Amar lo, Eli told Gluskim in Aderech, and he says to Eli, so I want you to take the loaf of bread. They came about a non-Jew. Amar lo, Magbai. Now this is Rabbi Gamliel talking to the non-Jew, and he says, Magbai told Gluskin halalo me Eli. So he refers to this non-Jew by name. His name was Magbai, and he says, Rabbi to his attendant Rabbi Eli, he says, go ahead and give this loaf of bread that we found in the street. So give it to this non-Jew. So nitapolo Rabbi Eli. Now after he gives him the bread, so now Rabbi Eli has a conversation with this non-Jew, and he says, Amrlo meichanata, where are you from? So Amrlo ma'yarishol Bergen, and I'm from huts. Right, we discussed this just in the previous parak about people living in huts and Yoshei Tzrifim, and their lives aren't lives, and their wives aren't their wives, and their children aren't their children. Anyway, that goes back to the fifth parak of Erevin. Anyway, so he says, I'm from these huts. Uma Shmecha, and Rabbi Eli asks this Nanju, what's your name? And he says, Magbai Shmeni. My name is Magbai. So Klumi Kircha, Rabbi Gamliel Me'olam. Question, simple question. Have you ever met Rabbi Gamliel before our encounter today? And Amar lo lav, and he said, no, I never met Rabbi Gamliel before. So Ba'os Hashem Lamanu Shekibin Rabbi Gamliel Baruch HaKodesh. How did Rabbi Gamliel know the name of this non-Jew if they never met before? And so Rabbi Eli comes to the conclusion there must be Ruach HaKodesh. Ushlosh Dvarim Lamdu Ba'os Hashem. Now the Gemara says, from this incident, there are three things in which we can learn. One, Lamanu Shem Avirin Ala Ochlin. So don't just simply walk by food. Meaning you see food, pick it up. It doesn't necessarily mean that you should eat it, but in other words, out of respect for the food, you should pick it up. And number two, v'lamanu sh'olchin achrei rov over a derachim. Now, you'll notice that Rabbi Gamliel himself didn't eat the bread. Why didn't he eat the bread? So, because he follows the principle of rov. Most of the people that are traveling down this path are non-Jews. So that meant that this bread was probably baked by a non-Jew. And so there are issues of kashrus. This is now a bread made by a non-Jew. Yes, there are heterim regarding bread baked by a non-Jew, but Rabbi Gamliel didn't want to hold by the heterim. And so therefore he assumed that the bread was made by a non-Jew. Now, this story occurred immediately after Pesach. Now, we didn't know that until this point in time, meaning the Gemara did not share that information with us. But anyway, chametz that existed at the time of Pesach and owned by a non-Jew, is it mutar b'hanah, asur b'hanah? So a discussion in the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Chav Ches. And so over here, clearly Rabbi Gamliel is of the position that it's mutter bahana, because he gave it to Magbai, he gave it to this non-Jew. Now, a gift is a hana, not only to the giftee, but also to the gifter as well. We know that whenever you give a gift, so there is an understood reciprocity that exists over there. And so, even though Rabbi Gamliel is not going to get a return immediately on his investment, but nevertheless, it's coming. And even though that's going to come for the bread that he gave to Magbai, nevertheless, that's going to be fine. So, chametz of a non-Jew is mutar b'hana. Now, when they get to the town of the Kziv, now, here we are, we're still in the Braisa. Hopefully, at this point in time, you're remembering why we're recording the Braisa. Okay, we're recording it for one particular reason, and we haven't gotten there yet. So, we're still here in the Braisa. They get to the town of Kziv, Echa Lishael al-Nidra. Someone goes to Rabbi Gamliel, and he wants his neder to be released. He wants to be released from his neder. So Amar Lezeshimo, so Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Eli, Klum Shazinu Revius Yain Italki. Now, we had a drink of wine, and it was not just any kind of wine, but it was Italian wine. And we had it before we started, So Rabbi Eli reminded him, Rabbi Gamliel, yeah, we had a drink of wine. So Imken Yitayel Acharenu Ad Shiafig Yeino. So Rabbi Gamliel says, okay, so we're not ready now. I'm not ready to pasken the halacha. Meaning, to be matir neder, you need a chacham. Chacham has to be lucid and clear in his thinking. And Rabbi Gamliel says, I'm still under the influence. I can't pasken right now. So you know what? You're going to follow us. He says to this person who wants to be released from his neder, you'll follow us. And when I feel like I have full sobriety, so then I'm going to release you from your neder. V'tiel acharem shosha milin. And how long do they go for? How long do they walk for? They walk for 3 mil. And this is the whole reason why we're quoting this price over here. Because he had a drink of one reverse of Italian wine. And how much did he need in order to gain sobriety? Not walking 1 mil, but walking 3 mil. And that's the question. So Achi Gila Sumo Shosor, they got to this, some sort of cleft. Kemishi Gila Sumo Ditsur, Yaram Rabbi Gamliel Menachamor, Rabbi Gamliel got off of his donkey, and Minisate Vyashav Itirlo Nidro. And he wrapped himself up in a talis, and now he serves as a dayan in order to release him from his neder. The Harbor Divarim Laman Meosho Shah, the Gemara says from this story, wow, there's a whole series of halachas that we learn from this story, and the Gemara starts counting out the halachas. Number one, Lamanusha Revius Yain Al Taki Mashakir. First of all, one revius of this Italian wine, and that already puts you under the influence. And number two, Vlamanusha Shikor Al Yore. And that is that once you are under the influence, you can't pasken the halacha. Number three, Vlamanusha Derech Mefigas Yain. If you're walking, that's going to induce sobriety, that'll mitigate the effects of the wine. Number four, Lamanusha Ein Mafira Nedarin, Lo Rechuv Lo Mahalach Velo Omeid El Yoshev. And if you want to be made for a neder, if you want to release somebody from his neder, you shouldn't be riding on a donkey, you shouldn't be walking, you shouldn't be standing, you should be sitting, so that way you can fully concentrate. Ketani Mias. Now, after going over all the halachas that we just learned together from this brisa, so now the Gemara wants the resolution. Because we said that in order to mitigate the effects of one revius of wine, you need to only walk 1 mil. And meanwhile, Rabbi Gamliel walked 3 mil. So, Ketani Mias Shlosha Milin. So, Shani Yain Ha'itaki Demishaker Tfei. So, the Gemara is going to propose a couple of answers. Answer number one, this is Italian wine. Italian wine is more potent. It creates more inebriation and therefore requires more sobriety. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu Loshano Ela Shashas Revius, Aval Shas Yosem Revius Kol Shekein Derech Tardaso Vishenim Shachar To." Let's remind ourselves of what we learned just a little earlier this morning regarding the statement of Rav Baravua, which is that if you're drinking a lot of wine, so then walking is not going to mitigate. Just the opposite. It's gonna get you more confused, and sleep is gonna get you more confused. So if it's really true that Italian wine is more potent, so then walking it off is not gonna help you. And so the Gemara says, okay, fine. So let's assume that the Italian wine is just as strong as any other wine. Rachav Shani, he wasn't walking off the influence, the intoxication, but rather what he was doing is he was riding. And so you can make the argument that if you're walking, so that requires more physical exertion. So there you only need to walk 1 mil, but if you're riding, so therefore you have to do more than that, you have to ride 3 mil. Another way, a simple way to resolve the difference. Hashadasu sahachi, l'rami barama nami lokashya, rachushani. So the Gemara says, this idea that he was riding on a donkey, so now we understand that the reason why he needed to go 3 mil as opposed to one is because riding a donkey is different than actually walking, which requires more physical exertion. Okay. Anyway, in the Braisa, that we just went through, so there was a lot of chapters to the story in the Braisa, and the Gemara wants to go back and revisit some other points that were brought up in the Braisa that we now have an opportunity to explore. The Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Nachman Mafir Nedarin Bein Mahalach Bein Omed Bein Rachov." The Gemara says, "Now, in the story, Rabbi Gamliel refused to be Matir Neder until he was stationary, seated, wrapped in a talis, and was able to devote all of his attention to releasing the person from the Neder. Meanwhile, Rav Nachman says, you want to release somebody from a Neder? It's really not a big deal. You could do so while standing, while riding, while sitting. It doesn't really matter." So the Gemara says, Tanayi. The Gemara says, yeah, that's true, and this is subject to a machlokas at Tanayim. And that is, what exactly is the process of releasing somebody from a neder. So the ikal amanda amar poskim becharata ulam viikad amanda amar ein poskim becharata. And there are two positions over here. I'm going to present it the way Rashi does this morning. And that is, one position is poskim becharata. Rashi says, sarich lechacham limso pesach, lishol shiyelo piskom peh lomar, ladas kein lo nadarti. One position is that to release somebody from a neder, so you have to know why he wants to be released from a neder. Meaning there has to be grounds for the release. If at the time when I made the neder, did I know about this, did I know about that, I would have regretted it going back to the time when I made it. There has to be some rationale behind the decision. V'ilo ha'isi yodeh shekein hu, lo ha'isi noder v'nimse neder nekar me'elav. So that is one opinion, and obviously Rabbi Gamliel subscribes to that position. The other is ein poskin. In Rashi writes over here, in tzorch leftoch lebecharata, ela ha'chacham okro, alfa pishe'eno, mostly lo tam akira. The other position, explains Rashi, is that you don't need to know anything. Meaning you don't need to know the basis of why they want to be released from the neder. All you need to know is that they want to be released from the neder, and that would be sufficient. If you subscribe to that position, obviously there's no thinking involved. There's no thought process involved, and therefore you can release the neder while you are standing, sitting, riding. It doesn't matter. That's the way Rashi presents it. You can see Tosos over here. Divra Amaska Poskin Charata. Tosos has a lengthy criticism of Rashi's pshat over here, but just for this morning, going to say it over like Rashi. So the Gemara says, fine. The Amar Rabba, let's just go back to the Gemara. Let's just finish up this point of the Gemara. Amar Rabba, Bar Bachana, Amar Rav Yochanan, my Pasuk le Rav Gamliel, how Gavra. What exactly, how did the exchange go between Rav Gamliel and this person? So he starts with quoting a Pasuk. Pasuk from Mishle. Yesh, Boteh, Kimak Deros, Charev, Lashon Chacham, Marpeh. Sometimes you're going to be pierced with a sword, but what can happen is that you'll speak to a chacham, and you're going to be healed. So kol abote ra'i ledokra b'cherev. So anyone who makes a bitui, an expression, meaning anyone who makes a neder, so really you should be stabbed with a sword. Meaning you shouldn't have made the neder to begin with. Elish lashon chacham emarpe. But you and I are going to go over the neder, and there's going to be a clear explanation of why it was that you regret making the neder, not only now, but going back to the time that you made it. And under those circumstances, now I'm going to be able to release you from the neder. Anyway, what comes out over here is that Rami Gamliel clearly was operating with this position that in order to release somebody from a neder, so you have to go over the reason why this person wants, in fact, to be released from his neder, and that's why he was seated and wrapped in a talis, because he needed his full concentration. And it's also why, of course, he needed his full faculties, and he needed full sobriety in order so that he could think this through. Okay, Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Tomorrow, we're going to pick up on a couple more points in the story. We'll pick it up tomorrow with Amar Mar, towards the bottom of the Amud. In the meantime, however, let's just quickly review the daf. Erevin Samech Dalet. So the first topic that we discussed this morning was what happens when I have a non-Jew living in the chaser and he's refusing to rent out his rights to the chaser. What do we do under those circumstances? In order to make an Erev, so step number one is that if there's a non-Jew living in the chaser, he has to rent out his rights. And he's refusing to do so. So what do you do? So we saw a couple of suggestions in terms of how to deal with this. One was Abaye. Everyone's going to be mevatel rishus. Every Jew is going to be mevatel rishus to one Jewish resident. And so therefore, what you're going to end up in this chatzar is one Jew, one non-Jew. That was Abaye's solution. Certainly creative. On the other hand, dispenses with the need to make an actual eruv. And Rava didn't like it. Rava didn't like it where we're going to be living in a chatzar and children are going to be growing up in a chatzar where there's no physical Erev. And they're going to forget about the institution of Erev. Rava didn't like it. Rava, therefore, offers a different solution. And that is, one of the Jewish residents over here of the chatzar is going to serve as an employee of the non-Jew. Yes, the definition of employee over here is going to be a very loose definition of employee, but he'll become an employee of the non-Jew, and now he can represent the non-Jew vis-a-vis the Erev of this Chatzer. That was Rav's solution to the problem. What if, the Gemara asked the question, what if a person has got multiple employees, each one of them now has to make a contribution to the heir of the Gemara says, of course not. Meaning this is only this solution is only there to help us and not to hurt us. That was our first issue. The Gemara moved on to discuss. Other issues, notably two halachas were set over in front of Rav Nachman. One, the solution of Rava of what we do under these circumstances. Rav Nachman loved this idea, praised the idea, and the other was is that if you are drinking a revius of wine, you can't paskin. And Rav Nachman did not love that idea. To get him lucid in the morning, he needs a drink. He needs a drink of wine, and he didn't love the idea. Rav Nachman was reprimanded by Rava. You can't do that. Meaning halacha is halacha, and you can't start picking and choosing which ones you like, which ones you don't like. Starting to grade the halachas, Rava says to Rav Nachman, you can't do it. Now, I would assume Rav Nachman knew this as well, but anyway, but Rava reprimanded him. Rav Nachman fully acknowledged and fully agreed. And then, as long as we talked about the second halacha, so it led to a digression that is going to go well into tomorrow's daf as well. This idea that if you are slightly inebriated, so you can't paskin the halacha. The Gemara moved its discussion to, if you're slightly inebriated, you shouldn't daven. But for slight inebriation, so your tefillah is a tefillah. If you are shikur, if you're drunk, so then your tefillah is not going to be a tefillah at all. So this was the distinction that was made in the Gemara, and the Gemara looked to try to make an operational definition of what's considered shasui versus what's considered shikur. When are you under the influence and versus when are you inebriated? And so the Gemara says basically your ability to control your language and control your sentences while you're in front of a melech, while you're in front of a king. As long as we were here, the Gemara then continued its digression. The Gemara went over the other halacha that was said as to the two people were parting from one another. The other halacha is what happens when you walk into a lot of wealth, what should you do with all this money, all this newfound money? And it's going to incite the Ayin Hara. So the Gemara says, so what you're going to do under those circumstances is you're going to take a portion of it and buy a Sefer Torah. You're going to buy tefillin. You're going to use it for a mitzvah. And that will mitigate the Ayin Hara. The Gemara goes back to this idea of if a person's inebriated, what can he do to induce sobriety? So he can take a short nap or walk a mill. The Gemara says that only works if you had one drink. But if you had multiple drinks, then it's not going to help. And that brought about the lengthy brisa regarding Rabbi Gamliel, where he was walking together with Rabbi Eli. They encountered a loaf of bread, a non-Jew. He handed the non-Jew the loaf of bread that they found. The many halachas that we gained from that incident. While continuing walking, Rabbi Gamliel encountered a person who wanted to be released from his neder. And Rabbi Gamliel says, well, let's walk a little bit more so that I'm fully sober. The many halachas that we learned over there, and the Gemara noted that Rabbi Gamliel refused to release him from his neder until he was fully sober, until he was sitting, wrapped in a talis, and the Gemara talked about what the basic requirement is to release somebody from a neder. Rabbi Gamliel obviously being of the position that you can only release somebody from a neder only with a rationale in terms of why this person regrets having made that neder. Ad kan.